The pyramid points to a specific location?
The inscription, Sato continued, reads, "The secret hides within the order, 8 Franklin Square."
Nola could scarcely imagine. An order? Like a Masonic or fraternal order?
I assume so, Sato replied.
Nola thought a moment, and then began typing again. Ma'am, maybe the street numbers on the square changed over the years. I mean, if this pyramid is as old as legend claims, maybe the numbers on Franklin Square were different when the pyramid was built. I'm now running a search without the number 8, for the order, Franklin Square, and Washington, D.C., and this way we might get some idea if there's... She stalled mid-sentence as the search results appeared.
What have you got?
Sato demanded. Nola stared at the first result on the list, a spectacular image of the Great Pyramid of Egypt, which served as the thematic backdrop for the homepage dedicated to a building on Franklin Square. The building was unlike any other building on the square, or in the entire city for that matter. What stopped Nola cold was not the building's bizarre architecture, but rather the description of its purpose. According to the website, this unusual edifice was built as a sacred mystical shrine designed by and designed for an ancient secret order. Chapter 98. Robert Langdon regained consciousness with a crippling headache.
Where am I?
Wherever he was, it was dark, deep cave dark, and deathly silent. He was lying on his back with his arms at his side. Confused, he tried moving his fingers and toes, relieved to find they moved freely with no pain.
What happened?
With the exception of his headache and the profound darkness, everything seemed more or less normal. Almost everything. Langdon realized he was lying on a hard floor that felt unusually smooth, like a sheet of glass. Stranger still, he could feel that the slick surface was in direct contact with his bare flesh. Shoulders, back, buttocks, thighs, calves.
Am I naked?
Puzzled, he ran his hands over his body.
Jesus, where the hell are my clothes?
In the darkness, the cobwebs began to lift, and Langdon saw flashes of memory, frightening snapshots. A dead CIA agent, the face of a tattooed beast, Langdon's head smashing into the floor. The images came faster, and now he recalled the sickening image of Catherine Solomon bound and gagged on the dining room floor.
My God!
Langdon sat bolt upright, and as he did, his forehead smashed into something suspended only inches above him. Pain exploded through his skull and he fell back, teetering near unconsciousness. Groggy, he reached up with his hands, groping in the darkness to find the obstacle. What he found made no sense to him. It seemed this room's ceiling was less than a foot above him.
What in the world?
As he spread his arms to his sides in an attempt to roll over, both of his hands hit sidewalls. The truth now dawned on him. Robert Langdon was not in a room at all.
I'm in a box.
In the darkness of his small coffin-like container, Langdon began pounding wildly with his fist. He shouted over and over for help. The terror that gripped him deepened with each passing instant until it was intolerable.
I've been buried alive.
The lid of Langdon's strange coffin refused to budge, even with the full force of his arms and legs pushing upward in wild panic. The box, from all he could tell, was made of heavy fiberglass, airtight, soundproof, lightproof, escape-proof.
I'm going to suffocate alone in this box.
He thought of the deep well into which he had fallen as a young boy, and of the terrifying night he spent treading water alone in the darkness of a bottomless pit. That trauma had scarred Langdon's psyche, burdening him with an overwhelming phobia of enclosed spaces. Tonight, buried alive, Robert Langdon was living his ultimate nightmare. Catherine Solomon trembled in silence on the floor of Malak's dining room. The sharp wire around her wrists and ankles had already cut into her, and the slightest movements seemed only to tighten her bonds. The tattooed man had brutally knocked Langdon unconscious and dragged his limp body across the floor along with his leather bag and the stone pyramid. Where they had gone, Catherine had no idea. The agent who had accompanied them was dead. She had not heard a sound in many minutes, and she wondered if the tattooed man and Langdon were still inside the house. She had been trying to scream for help, but with each attempt, the rag in her mouth crept back dangerously closer to her windpipe. Now she felt approaching footsteps on the floor, and she turned her head, hoping against hope that someone was coming to help. The massive silhouette of her captor materialized in the hallway. Catherine recoiled as she flashed on the image of him standing in her family home 10 years earlier.
He killed my family.
Now he strode toward her. Langdon was nowhere to be seen. The man crouched down and gripped her around the waist, hoisting her roughly onto his shoulder. The wire sliced into her wrists, and the rag muffled her muted cries of pain. He carried her down the hallway toward the living room, where, earlier today, the two of them had calmly sipped tea together.
Where is he taking me?
He carried Catherine across the living room and stopped directly in front of the large oil painting of the Three Graces that she had admired this afternoon.
You mentioned you liked this painting,
the man whispered, his lips practically touching her ear.
I'm glad. It may be the last thing of beauty you see.
With that, he reached out and pressed his palm into the right side of the enormous frame. To Catherine's shock, the painting rotated into the wall, turning on a central pivot like a revolving door.
A hidden doorway.
Catherine tried to wriggle free, but the man held her firmly, carrying her through the opening behind the canvas. As the Three Graces pivoted shut behind them, she could see heavy insulation on the back of the canvas. Whatever sounds were made back here were apparently not meant to be heard by the outside world. The space behind the painting was cramped, more like a hallway than a room. The man carried her to the far side and opened a heavy door, carrying her through it onto a small landing. Catherine found herself looking down a narrow ramp into a deep basement. She drew a breath to scream, but the rag was choking her. The incline was steep and narrow. The walls on either side were made of cement, awash in a bluish light that seemed to emanate from below. The air that wafted up was warm and pungent, laden with an eerie blend of smells. The sharp bite of chemicals, the smooth calm of incense, the earthy musk of human sweat, and pervading it all, a distinct aura of visceral animal fear.
Your science impressed me,
the man whispered as they reached the bottom of the ramp.